Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I am a health, food, and environmental journalist covering all aspects of this interconnected environment in which we live and all the ways that it supports us and we can support it in nurturing and protecting our health in the public commons. I report on the Huffington Post and Alternet, and every week with you I'm here and Connect the Dots, and have been for the last several years, to speak with different thought leaders, experts, scientists, advocates, activists, and people holding different spaces around and levels of understanding around all of the different intersecting vectors and issues that impact our health and environment. On today's show, I'm really pleased to have with us someone with whom I've had the opportunity to speak on a couple of occasions, and I just so value this organization and the work we're doing, that they are doing and that we can do with them. That is the Progressive Democrats of America. You may know them, PDA. They champion a whole range of causes and are involved in several very interesting coalitions, which we'll learn about more in today's show. We'll be speaking with Jean Marie Doré. I always give that the French pronunciation. She is a National Issue Teams Coordinator, and this is a great organization with which to be involved because they spearhead a lot of different things and kind of have their finger in different pies. So it's a terrific way if you are either strongly affiliated with some particular cause that you are advocating and concerned about and working on, to be more broadly involved in a range of initiatives, or if you're someone who is kind of wanting to put a toe in and get involved in activism, this is a great way to begin because they do things on a number of different fronts. So we're going to be discussing both a little bit about the organization, their current initiatives, as well as Jean Marie's terrific insights from her long work in this area and the activism that she has been involved with initiating and serving. So welcome to Connect the Dots, Jean Marie.
Oh, thank you, Allison. It was a very, very gracious introduction. Where would you like to start today? Because there's a lot we can talk about in relation to PDA and the issues that we cover, because as you mentioned, they're way across the board.
Well, let's just begin with some background on PDA in terms of what your positioning is, where you stand, and a little bit about your history and leadership, which I know is recently you've lost one of your founding leaders and all. So maybe if you could orient our listeners to that, that would be a great way to get started.
Sure. Progressive Democrats came out of the Kucinich campaign. Many of the people in leadership in PDA were part of that presidential campaign, primarily one of our co-founders, Tim Carpenter, who had been a lifelong activist and worked in the areas of worker rights, immigrant rights, the environment, for peace, you name it, any sort of progressive or people's type cause. Tim had been involved in those things, I think, probably since about the age of 14 or 15. So this had been a lifelong thing for him to continue to be at the forefront of the battle. And when the presidential campaign ended in Roxbury, Massachusetts, at the Democratic National Convention there, the group came together and decided that they needed to, instead of coalescing around a candidate, to coalesce around the issues. And Progressive Democrats was born on the floor there of the convention that day. Mm-hmm. And so that was 10 years ago. And we are actually just coming up on celebrating our 10-year anniversary. We're having a large gathering in Northampton, Massachusetts this weekend, May 10th. And it will include a visit from Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders of Vermont, who is considering a run for the presidency. One of the key things that we do at Progressive Democrats of America that I should explain is that we are not officially affiliated with the Democratic Party. Tim Carpenter's vision was to do everything in his power to pull the Democratic Party further to the left and bring it back to the principles that it stood upon during the FDR administration and down through the 60s, which it seems to have let go of somewhat and become floated more to the right. So in doing such, what we try to do at Progressive Democrats of America is to help and encourage both campaigns, issue, and for Congress and the presidency, should that come up, and encourage those candidates and campaigns based on issues that are more progressive, that do move more towards the left. Therefore, we don't endorse every single candidate who's a Democrat. Typically on an election cycle, we may endorse 20 candidates because we are going to choose the ones who line up best with our beliefs and principles in regards to progressive values.
And how would you, you know, for anyone who has been, you know, not looking into politics in recent years because they find it frightening or, you know, they've just been tuned out and tuned into other things, how would you define, like, the progressive vision or agenda, just to give that kind of overview?
Probably the simplest term I could give you would be anti-corporate. One of the things that I think that all of us are seeing, and it doesn't matter which party you affiliate yourself with or which side of the political spectrum you're coming from, we're all seeing the move towards more and more corporate power in this country and worldwide. And when you look at the original progressive movement under FDR, under Teddy Roosevelt, and the Progressive Party that actually came out of the Republican Party under Teddy Roosevelt in 1913, the platform that they established in 1913 is almost identical to the platform that we are using currently. It is a populist platform. It's about supporting what's best for the people, what their rights are, what their needs are, how to build a strong and healthy middle class, how to build a society that respects the rights of everyone in it. So I'd say that's probably the simplest way to explain it.
You know, one of the things that all makes complete sense to me, and yet being, as you know, one who talks to the sort of audience of health involved and people, many of whom, you know, are very concerned about the stress and you know, kind of doing everything in a calm and loving manner, when they will hear things like, you know, we're against the corporate whatever, people become frightened by that kind of formulation, I've noticed. And, you know, even though obviously it's obvious what you're for to those, but could you articulate that a little bit, just so that anyone that could be listening and having that problem will be kind of brought in and brought on board? Because I think we're all talking about the same thing. We just, you know, language it in different ways. So I just want to, you know, our audience
to hear
that.
I think that's a really important point, because I think people confuse people on the left side of the spectrum, progressives, populists, as being against business. And it's certainly not that we're against business. What we're against is oppressive business practices. We're against some of the, you know, really standard things, like the creation of monopolies so that we eliminate competition in the workplace. We're against things that would exempt corporations from following the letter of the law. Right now, one of the biggest issues across the country is with fracking and in the fact that they are exempted from the Clean Air and Clean Water Acts. Thus, that's what we're against. We're against the fact that the way the laws are being structured currently, tax and otherwise, corporations are becoming exempt or above the law. And what we're looking for is to say, this is the United States of America. This is a democracy. Everyone here is supposed to have an equal opportunity, an equal chance to make it. And therefore, we can't have laws that give someone else a greater chance or a greater opportunity over everyone around them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's really what we're about. We're about saying that everyone's equal, everyone should have that same opportunity, and you can't give someone else a greater opportunity over the rest of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, with corporations, that's what we're seeing. And thus, for example, right now, people who are familiar with the net neutrality issue.
Well, let's talk about the net neutrality issue.
Sure.
Because we haven't, a while back, I think we had Josh Silver on the show, but net neutrality is becoming a hotter issue. And, like, can you just give us a sort of ground level kind of initiation into that? Because it is becoming quite timely, and I'm really glad we're, you know, bringing it up on the show. But many of the listeners may not have been sort of tuned in on it recently. So please let everyone know what that is about.
Sure. The basic gist of net neutrality in the most simple terms is the way the Internet works currently is that no matter what website you click on, no matter where you take your business, personal or otherwise, on the Internet, the speed of traffic is equal.
Mm-hmm.
In creating that equal speed of traffic, no individual person or company gets priority. And this may sound very simple, and you may say, oh, but I could see reasons why you might want to have faster streaming of video or other things of that nature. But the reason that net neutrality is important is that if you start granting higher speeds, say, to Netflix, what ends up happening is another company may say, you know what, me and my friend Frank got together and we want to put together our own video streaming business. And we have a really great idea for this that I think is way better than what Netflix is doing. And right now, Bob and Frank could get together and put together a system and make that go. And because the speeds are equal, they can compete. But if we go to a model where the speeds are no longer equal, and you have to pay for that higher speed, Netflix has the capital to pay for the highest speed available. Bob and Frank do not. Therefore, Bob and Frank will no longer be able to compete with Netflix, because when you go to their site and say, I want to download a movie, the time could be twice as long, five times as long. We don't know what it would end up being, but it will definitely be longer. And, in fact, it will take longer to load up their site. And because it takes longer to load up, you may abandon ship and say, I'm going to go back over to Netflix because this is too slow. And thus, they can't compete. They can't build their business. So, therefore, it's going to be – it's going to hurt small businesses, independent businesses, startups. It's going to hurt anybody who is independent in trying to create their own traffic. And thus, it's the Internet will quickly become something that is, again, dominated by corporate interests. And so this is what the real danger is. So, you know, I know a lot of people on the who are on the other side of the spectrum, on the right, might say, well, you know, you should be able to pay to get whatever great speeds you want. But many of the people on the right are very pro-business, and if you are, this should be something that you really want to look at, because if you are somebody who wants to start a new business, you're going to have trouble, and it's, and it could end up being a business killer. The other thing to consider, too, in that equation is the fact that in search engines, when you put in, say you're looking for information on, I don't know, where to vacation in Rhode Island. And you put that into the Google search engine right now. Part of the equation in terms of what comes up is how many hits that website has had, so how many people have visited it, as well as how fast you can get to it. Now, speed doesn't always have to do with what the lines of the Internet are doing. It may have to do with the server on your side. So that is something that everyone can handle, every business can handle. They can upgrade their servers. They can improve their performance. But If it has to do with internet speed, again, that will be calculated into its ranking on Google, and therefore, again, independent sources of information are going to fall to the bottom of the ranking, both due to speed and due to the lack of visits that they will have to their website based on that slow speed. So
I just want to point out something there, which is that this is something that obviously, you know, affects it affects economic viability across the board for many, many people. It also affects small business owners, as you mentioned, but it also affects people who want different kinds of services. I don't know if anyone, well, pretty much everyone, I guess, that has any kind of online cable and internet service may be dealing now, thanks to, you know, media conglomeration and monopoly, one or two choices, and they are not very accountable. If there's any problem, there's no other options. You know, you're basically a captured audience. You don't have any other choices. And if you've ever had a problem with those kind of providers, and, you know, raise his hand, I have, I know many other people who have, you know, you're basically stuck because you've allowed a monopoly to occur and you're out of options. There's a very similar issue with cell phones. And, you know, this is something that, you know, the whole idea of business competition is to create, you know, and the fact that that would be wise, even though it hasn't proven very wise in a number of arenas, but the notion that it has a kind of organic, you know, we sort of don't trust that nature has an organic process, but we trust that business has an organic process that will be self-leveling. But then you take that, you know, that process, you intervene in that, and you take these things off the table and, you know, and allow and create monopolies, which was really against the whole intention of allowing business to thrive. And then you basically, you know, people are hijacked and held hostage by that in terms of their choices across the board in a whole bunch of different kinds of options for services of all kinds. You know, you can't individualize.
This is going to affect things like education. I mean, mm-hmm. something as simple as your son or daughter sitting down at the table to do a report for a class in the evening. Mm-hmm. Their access to that information could suddenly become very limited.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people right now use independent news sources. Print media is going away, and a lot of people feel that they want to go look across the board at a variety of sources in order to put a story together so that it makes sense to them.
Mm-hmm.
Media sources will no longer be easily accessible, and they may end up not being accessible at all because they can't survive on the small number of traffic that's coming through there due to the potential of change in foot traffic if we get rid of net neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could hurt you if you wanted to, you know, buy flowers for your mother. And
mm-hmm.
I know with me, my mother-in-law lives in an area where she does not have a postal address. She has to go to the post office to pick up her mail every week.
Mm-hmm.
That means many places don't deliver to her.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to get flowers to her, I need to look up the local florist online and look through their catalog if I want to send her flowers for Mother's Day this week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That site I might not be able to get access to, nor may it exist anymore, if they find that it's no longer being productive for them because the speed is so slow,
mm-hmm.
and therefore no one's visiting it any longer.
And would that also mean that, you know, on your and my computers, you know, we would have slow service, or, you know, how would that actually work, yeah?
Yes, mm-hmm. it would. It would mean that we have slower service because we would no longer be the priority. People like Amazon would be a priority because corporations are people right now under the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, UPS, I'm sure their site would be a priority. You could track your packages, assuming you can order them from where you still want to.
Mm-hmm.
But, the priority would end up going to basically your large retailers and places that are issuing the most content currently, because these are the places that could afford to pay for that speed.
Mm. So how do people take action to protect net neutrality?
One of the most important things I think that people should be doing right now is writing letters in to a variety of places. You can start with your members of Congress, but I know right now the SEC chairman is going to be the person who is going to be making this final decision. Mm-hmm. I believe that they are still currently taking comments on the issue. Going to their website is a good way to do this, is to go there. There's an easy form to fill out.
And what was the name of that website that they would be going to? Do you have a link to that on PDA, or shall we get that later in the show?
Yeah, let's get it later in the show, and I'll grab the information while
okay.
we're on here,
so
and then I can make sure that everybody
everyone.
Has that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That sounds good. So, in other words, you have a direct link in where people can, you know, they can go to your site, they can click in, and then they can perform these various actions that you're recommending.
On PDA's website, for certain campaigns, we do that.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have a broad array of topics in our organization, I will say it's very grassroots. We are primarily volunteer-driven. We do not have a link for every single issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's something that's very unique to PDA and one of the reasons that it's always great to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
We don't cover all the issues. We cover mm-hmm. a lot of issues, a lot of important mm-hmm. issues, but because mm-hmm. it's a grassroots organization, the way we cover issues is because it comes up through our membership.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we have our members, our coalition partners, and those who are involved in PDA, they bring up the issues, and mm-hmm. we find that they bubble to the top because we have many channels by which our membership can communicate back and forth with one another across the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unusual for people across the country to be on a first-name basis and to know each other quite well because we do put together meetings, both phone conference calls, online listservs where we can communicate, and as well as in-person meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can facilitate that type of communication across the country. And so, for example, one of our newest campaigns this past year was spearheading movement of the Equal Rights Amendment, and
mm-hmm.
that took off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now coalesced into a very solid campaign, one of our strongest. And
mm-hmm.
so as I said, you know, for somebody who wants to get involved in a particular issue, if you don't see it at PDA, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that we need more people to come together to talk about it and to take some leadership on it to help us move it forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you tell people a little bit who might be interested about this campaign?
The Equal Rights Amendment?
The Equal Rights Amendment campaign, yeah.
Yes. The Equal Rights Amendment campaign has to do with the original Equal Rights Amendment that we were trying to move forward in the 70s and early 80s, which was a very simple constitutional amendment stating that you could not discriminate on the basis of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Many people were finding seem to be confused about the amendment and its status. Many think that it was passed.
Mm-hmm.
Many don't realize that you can discriminate against women in this country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with the Women of Walmart case back 2 years ago, and the case was dismissed by the Supreme Court.
Can you just give a little highlight of what that case was about?
Sure. The case, mm-hmm. it was a class action lawsuit
mm-hmm.
where literally hundreds, if not thousands, of women came together who had worked for Walmart to say that they were discriminated against. And the types of discrimination ranged across the board, from sexual harassment
mm-hmm.
to lower pay to not being moved up to management positions and bypassed in exchange for their male counterparts. There were broad forms of discrimination that were going on.
Mm-hmm.
So the lawsuit coalesced into a class action, And the what happened was is Walmart felt that the class action was too large and that the discrimination was not valid, and there were too many forms of discrimination that they were being charged with, and therefore this case needed to be broken down or taken apart.
Mm-hmm.
When it reached the Supreme Court, they ended up agreeing with Walmart. However, the part of it that was the most stunning and the most damaging for women
mm-hmm.
was the fact that Judge Scalia, in his remarks, stated that women are not a protected class in the United States, and therefore they can be discriminated against legally.
What?
Yes.
What?
So, this is incredible coming down from the Supreme Court in this country. And this has a lot to do with the way Judge Scalia views the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us who took, you know, our civics classes in junior high and high school were taught that the Constitution is a living document.
Mm.
And therefore, we have to continuously help to change and update it and reinterpret it. Judge Scalia's vision of the Constitution is as a stagnant and historic document. Therefore, it does not change. Thus, when he looks at that document, he says, well, this document was written in 1776, and they didn't give women rights, and they didn't give women the right to vote. Therefore, women have no rights.
Oh, how crazy. But the whole, I'm sorry, but the whole purpose of the law is to make determinations for now. And so this is basically, you know, what is this saying? We have to, I mean, this is like dogma or some kind of thing. That's
incredible. This is basically what we have happening in this country, and this explains a lot about how our Supreme Court is functioning currently. We have a Supreme Court whose majority is interpreting the Constitution as though it were 1776 all over again. So this is a huge problem, and this is why we're seeing the rollbacks on so many rights, you know, with the Voting Rights Act last year, civil rights, you know, we're seeing the resegregation of schools. In fact, it's another big issue. We had desegregation happen through the federal court system.
Mm-hmm.
Schools were told they had to integrate those schools. Central High School in Alabama was, you know, was the example that we all watched in this country for throughout the civil rights movement. Central High School now is over 99% black because they went back to federal court. They were able to undo the decision that caused them to be integrated. And while they had been a centerpiece for showing how successful the integration of a high school could be, they now are completely segregated again. They have two high schools in the town, a white high school and a black high school. And the lines are drawn racially. Students talk about the fact that at Central High School, which is now primarily African American, that they can sit in their classroom and look out the window and see down the street white students who are walking off to the bus to go to the other high school, which means those lines were not drawn to say who's closest to what school, which would be the logical way in which you would do this, but the lines are drawn among racial and socioeconomic lines. So in fact, the numbers that they're looking at currently show that there is a greater amount of segregation now than there was in 1955.
Unbelievable. Well, we're coming up on our break here, and we have a couple of windows open, you know, but it really also shows, I mean, we've been discussing, you know, the integration of schools. We've been discussing the Equal Rights Amendment. We've been talking about the overall context of how Supreme Court decisions today are made in a very retrogressive, stagnant manner. And of course, this will affect a whole, and we've been talking about net neutrality, which is, you know, are the ability of average people to find an economic place to participate, to compete, and how to protect the the information and communication services that sustain that. So these are all, you know, really interlocking, big picture, systemic issues that can, you know, that people are addressing, and Progressive Democrats of America and you, Jean Marie, are addressing on multiple fronts. So I'm just kind of naming those windows because we'll be coming back and kind of, you know, talking a little bit more about what people can do and what some of the current initiatives are to address them in the second half of the show after we go to our station identification break, which is coming up right now. So please stay with us, listeners. I'm Allison Rose Levy here in Connect the Dots talking to Jean Marie Dobé of the Progressive Democrats of America, and we'll be back in the second half of the show. Welcome back, listeners, to the second half of Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Today we're talking with Jean Marie Dobé of the, sorry for all of the mispronunciations today, from the Progressive Democrats of America. And we really had an exciting first half of the show covering a range of issues. If you missed the first half of the show, you can find us on the PRM website this afternoon. In the Connect the Dots archives, we were discussing net neutrality, and we'll be offering in this half of the show some ways to link in and take action on that. We also began a very fascinating discussion that we'll be continuing with in this half about the Equal Rights Amendment, civil rights, and some other things. You know, basically the overall news, which shouldn't be a big shocker to anyone who's paying attention to the news or regularly listening to this program, is that on a number of fronts, many of the protections, safety nets, supports to citizens, the economy, healthcare, and public life that we've enjoyed, thanks to a lot of hard work by a lot of citizens and public officials in times past, have really been kind of rolling in the wrong direction. And it's organizations like the Progressive Democrats of America that are, you know, really trying to hold the line and push it back and really restore a lot of the democratic functions and protections that we really think of as being core to what our country is and, you know, what our expectation of a society that reflects our values is, this is really interesting. Usually, you know, on Connect the Dots, we'll discuss kind of one issue at a time. So, you know, stay with us today because we're kind of covering a multitude of things, but I think it's also important to uptick our ability to handle some of this complexity, because we are living in a complex situation. We're living in a world where a lot of things are going on in the big picture, and you know, I think we have to increase our capacity and our tolerance for really facing up to that, rather than retreating and kind of going, well, I have my cause, or, you know, I'm here in my corner, or, you know, I just want to take care of myself and my family, all of which are necessary and understandable and very important goals, and I don't want to in the least downgrade them. But, you know, we have a bigger challenge in this time, which is how to include a broader awareness of where things are going in our society and how that is going to affect ourselves and our families, other people, and the future. So, you know, we're going to be upticking our risk tolerance for complexity. Across the board, I think we need to do it. And I think the range of issues that a single organization like PDA covers is, and really covers, not just because they, as Jean Marie Dore, with whom we're talking today, explained in the first half, not just because they just kind of pick them out of a hat, but because they're really the issues that people from the grassroots level want to address and that kind of bubble up. So by looking at that broad range through the lens of a single organization, it does two things for us. I think it helps, I think anyone working on any front can relate to, you know, some of the social breakdowns that we are hearing about today. And also for anyone interested in a point of entree in terms of how they can participate in broader efforts, I think PDA is, you know, offers a great opportunity to do that. So that's my little coda. And now we'll go back to our conversation with Jean-Marie Doré, who's a National Issue Team Coordinator at PDA. Can you just, before we kind of plunge back into some of our issues, just give just a short snapshot of what brought you to doing this kind of work?
Sure. In all honesty, my family's always been politically engaged. I won't say we're people who run for office or, you know, sit on the city council. However, we've always been politically engaged and politically involved. My great-grandmother, on my father's side, her cousin was the first French-Canadian governor of Rhode Island. Hmm. My great-grandmother on my mother's side, she was actually one of the primary organizers that helped to get North Dakota statehood.
Oh.
So, as I said, there's always been a feel that there was a civic responsibility that we had wherever we were, because back in their own countries that they came from, they were also very politically engaged. But there's a civic responsibility to be engaged in the country that you were a part of to help make it a better place.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the most recent example is my uncle, who was a regional director for OSHA.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he wrote most of the modern OSHA laws during the late 60s and 70s.
Wow.
In regards to worker protections.
Hmm.
And when he finally had to retire due to Parkinson's back in 1993, the New York Times wrote a wonderful piece about him, calling him the best friend the working man ever had.
Oh, my gosh. Amazing.
And so I would say my Uncle Ron McCann is somebody that I very much model myself after in trying to be the type of person that he was, because he made a lot of personal sacrifices to be able to be that person,
mm-hmm.
to be able to do that job.
Mm.
And so, as I said, you know, it's a family where we've always been involved and come at it from a lot of varied and different angles. I would say for me personally, it finally coalesced it started to coalesce, I would say, around 2000 when September 11th hit, and I was living in the New York area at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was working in the international banking community, and I was a little disturbed by the whole flow of things, and to me, something wasn't sitting right, and I felt the need to get out of there,
mm-hmm.
out of that industry.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you talk about connecting the dots, and for me, I hadn't quite connected the dots yet, but something was unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
So I left. I decided to start out anew. I went back to school. I did a lot of different things during that period. But when I finally was going to finish up another degree, we were running headlong into the recession.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the banking community was falling apart, and I wasn't really shocked nor surprised
mm-hmm.
about what was happening or why it was happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I found my career choices suddenly extraordinarily limited.
Mm-hmm.
I was not finding work.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to pursue another degree for fear that I would get myself so entrenched in debt, which I was already picking up having gone back to school.
Mm-hmm.
I finally, in 2010, it was literally just days after the 2010 election. So this would have been mm-hmm. November of 2009. My new husband and I had come together with my mother,
who is in her 70s, and we had purchased a home together because we knew my mom is alone, and we felt making a transition now for her while she's still healthy would be better mm-hmm. than trying to make a transition later when something happened.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought a home together. We had our first child, and the wave of Tea Party people that were coming into the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking with my child in the stroller, and one of my friends standing next to me as we're walking, and she says, "I don't understand how this could have happened."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, did you vote?"
Mm-hmm.
She said, "Well, no." I said,
"Oh, wow,
and
what an amazing story."
She yeah. says, I've never voted. I don't know.
Oh, my.
I've never got involved. I didn't think it was important."
Wow.
And I was shocked because this was somebody I've been friends with my entire life.
Right.
And then she said something that kind of completely blew me away. She said, "Well," she's like, "you know, it probably happened because of all those illegals voting."
Unbelievable. Oh, my God.
And at that point, I was so shocked. I realized, yeah. oh, my gosh, the level of ignorance
right.
in relation to voting, who's voting, what's
right.
happening on the ground in front of us, on the ground in front of me, somebody I'd known for over 20 years,
yeah.
was just beyond belief. I had no idea. And so I realized I needed to get involved. And I literally went home that evening and started contacting every organization I could to figure out how to get involved in this.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, and,
what an incredible story.
Yeah, and so, you know, then things kind of
well,
took
you know,
off.
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second
sure.
here. You know, this is an amazing story, and it's something I think we all really have to contemplate, because there are ways, large and small, and without being punishing, guilt-thrusting, guilting ourselves or anything like that. I think that we, you know, we're very ready, for example, in the health realms that I cover, to, you know, talk about dealing with our emotions, you know, striving to the positive, but we're not really that interested or able to have the conversation, which I feel you've just begun right there, to talk about, you know, how much we're either afraid or holding back or tuned out on what's going on in our bigger world. And, you know, what you just, you know, found out there about a close friend, someone who you had much in common with, and, you know, probably still do, I think we all could benefit from a little self-examination, you know, about what we're doing, where we could do more, what frightens us in the larger arena. And, you know, it's really interesting that in the absence of information, and, you know, even while not voting and while not taking that opportunity, people want to, you know, kind of turn around and say it's somebody else that did it, rather than, you know, we'll have a million teachings that I've heard in the health field about looking in the mirror and you're the one who controls reality, but we're not looking about how our participation as citizens, has a say or lack of a say toward these greater social realities. So I'm putting that out as a challenge, a little bit to my listeners here, because, you know, I think that's such a telling point. Now, do you feel, now that you've kind of made that commitment, found the way to participate and are involved in, you know, kind of enlisting others, Jean Marie, do you feel that, you know, that we're, you know, that there is that kind of ignorance? Do you think people are beginning to wake up? Do you think, what are the reasons that maybe people feel disengaged or don't feel they can be effective? I mean, what have you discovered now that you've really made a commitment and made this, you know, found the way to make this your regular work and job?
Well, I think there's a number of factors.
Mm-hmm.
What I find and what I have found mm-hmm. is that many people feel and have felt in the past in particular
mm-hmm.
that their vote, their actions, what they were trying to say or do did mm-hmm. not matter. Somebody else would take care of it. And I think because we had had a strong and vibrant middle class in the past, because we had been building on good environmental laws and protections for workers and protections for our food chain for many decades, that people became lax and said, you know, I'm not going to worry about it. The politicians have that under control.
Mm-hmm.
And while that may be true to a degree, that pressure has to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, with my friend, as I talked to her more and more about the importance of being involved,
mm-hmm.
the more she realized that she actually did have to be involved at least at the most basic level, which was casting a vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, during the next 2 years up to 2012, I had become a voter registrar and had offered to register her multiple times, and she never took me up on it.
Mm-hmm.
However, what made me so happy was, well, I continuously engaged her and talked to her, not necessarily telling her what she had to think, but just talking to her about my own frustration on those issues.
Mm-hmm.
The best text message I have ever received was from her on election day.
Mm-hmm.
When I asked her if she wanted to get together for coffee later that day,
mm-hmm.
and she said, well, I can't because our whole family is getting ready to go down to the poll to vote together. I was so happy to hear that because
mm-hmm.
As far as I knew, she'd never registered. She, you know, but she had gone and she had done it on her own because
mm-hmm.
she was going to do it herself.
Mm-hmm.
She got herself registered and she went down there with her husband and her son and they voted as a family. And I thought that was really wonderful because that's really what it needs to be about.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be about everyone stopping and saying that no longer this, I don't get involved in politics or I don't talk about politics or politics is icky.
Mm-hmm.
But to stop and say, these political issues affect me, they affect mm-hmm. my family, they affect my household, they affect my community, and as a group, we're going to come together and we're going to vote because it's important, because it affects every last one of us and it affects our futures every day of our lives.
Amen. Amen. Exactly. You know, it's so interesting to talk about, like, how we, and because this is really the theme of Connect the Dots, how do we connect from the personal to the bigger picture and have efficacy and engagement all across all of those levels? And so this is a fantastic, you know, kind of let your hair down dialogue about that. And I'll confess something, I'm sure I've never said this on the program before, which is, you know, I do a lot of reporting, writing, I'm working on a book, I do these radio programs, and participate a lot in social media with people. And, you know, sometimes when I'm writing an article or working on a chapter of my book, I'll be thinking about something that a friend of mine said. You know, so if a friend of mine says, well, I don't get this or I feel that or why is that a problem or fracking must be fine because NPR said so, and, you know, then you have to go, oh, well, who's funding NPR right now? It's not that we all have to begin in the same place or that we have to agree immediately at, you know, square one.
Right.
For me, my dialogue with friends who are in different places, whether they're, you know, friends of 30 years or friends on Facebook that I met 6 months ago, you know, inform how my conversation all the way across, not just with them, but with other people too. And so, you know, through talking about, like, how we talk about it, that also could, you know, and through sharing that with each other, we could get clues about, you know, well, what happened with my relative. And even if it's not like a success story where you say, oh, yeah, you know, like you just said, a fantastic success story. She didn't register through you, but she registered her whole family and went and voted, and she got the message. Even if it isn't, even if it's, well, that, you know, so-and-so uncle of mine, he just will never get it. I think these are important conversations to have because
yeah.
we have to change both one by one. One by one by one, we have to change as communities. We have to shift things as a society. So, you know, I think all of those things help make it more personal for people and should be part of the conversation. And I love that story. That's just such a great story. I'll be so tempted to steal it and quote it.
Feel free. Yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, how I ended up personally becoming involved with PDA,
mm-hmm. We just have a few more minutes of the show,
sure.
So I just want to alert
I'll
you
wrap
to
it
that.
Up quickly.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good.
I got involved back in you know, just during 2010. Mm-hmm. And I worked with probably 25 or 30 different organizations at that time.
Wow.
But PDA, I found, was the most genuine in terms of the grassroots support. Tim Carpenter, who is our co-founder, you know, reached out to me personally when he saw how much work I was doing and wanted to get me more involved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's kind of the quality that went on there, which is why when he passed away last week from terminal cancer, it was such an emotional blow for us. We'd been preparing, but, you know, it's very painful. And yet we know how important it is to continue that work and to continue that model of reaching out to new people coming into the organization who may not have been involved at that level before and bringing them upwards, because at the grassroots is where it's happening.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, the grassroots is where it's happening? I mean, for people that are, you know, kind of, yeah.
Sure. For example, I mean, I think what happened in Madison, Wisconsin that winter in February is the most basic example. People were so outraged over the changes that were going to be made by their new governor that people just, all of a sudden, across social media, talking to friends through their unions, through their workplace, they just showed up at the Capitol. And I was one of those people, because Madison's pretty close to where I live. I live at the Wisconsin-Illinois border.
Mm-hmm.
And so you went up there, and it wasn't militant people marching. It was grandparents with their grandchildren. It was people with babies and strollers. It was farmers who brought their tractors up there. It was a complete population of people coming together and saying, no, this isn't what we wanted. This isn't what we want for our city, for our state, for our country. We want something different than you are giving us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in many ways, some of the violations that we're seeing now in terms of laws being made and changes being made to our social and economic structure are so egregious. The people are now really paying attention. They're now really seeing what's happening, and they're saying, I got to find a way to get involved. I got to find a way to make a change. And whether it be just registering to vote or getting out in the streets or one
or
of the things that we
do. Clicking on an online link. Yeah, or clicking on an online link.
Yeah,
in fact,
one of the things that we do, you can go to PDA, PDAcommunity.org, or you can go to our other website, which is PDAmerica.org.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the easiest ways to get involved is our Educate Congress campaign. There is a banner across the top. You can click on Issues, and you can click on Educate Congress. And if you click there, each month we have another letter. And there's a letter for your House representative, and there's a letter for your senator.
That's terrific. Now, let me just ask something, because people can go and fill that in. Let me just ask, is there something there for the net neutrality campaign that we were discussing at the beginning of the show? Because I just want to make sure we give people that. Will they find it there?
Sure. Those issues change every month. Now, the FCC thing is not there this month, because we're actually have the
if you don't have it there, is there another organization that we can send people to? Because
well,
we're just coming down close to the end of the show, and I want to be able to just give that to people.
Yes. Where you
can
need
go to
free
go press?
Is directly to the FCC's website.
Uh-huh.
The address is www.fcc.gov, G-O-V, /comments. COMMENTS.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to www.fcc.gov /comments, this is a place where you can go to make comments directly to the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
The number one item on the list is protecting and promoting the open internet.
Mm-hmm.
You click on that, and there is a place to leave your comment, and they're gathering comments right now.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, these are open for about 30 days. And this one, of course, has the most comments made thus far.
I also want to note that people can go to www.freepress.net, and
yeah.
There's a Save the Internet campaign. So, you know, you can also connect through that. They have a ready email that, you know, then they'll communicate with you. So if, you know, if you need help in figuring out what to say, you want more information about this, and you can sign on and be updated, that's also another option, is to go to freepress.net and, you know, and be able to take action on the net neutrality issue that we were just mentioning. We're coming down to the end of Connect the Dots. I want to thank you so much, Jean Marie Doré of PDA, Progressive Democrats of America, for the wonderful conversation we've had on today's show. Listeners, go to the PDA website, as Jean Marie described, Free Press as well, the FCC website, many different ways to take action. And if you've enjoyed this show, please like us on iTunes, pass it along to your friends. More people need to get involved. And if any of you has kind of had your, you know, your thoughts provoked or your mind turned or kind of thinking more about action and have any kind of questions or interest in that, I invite you to contact me via Facebook on Connecting the Dots for Health and let me know about it. I'd love to share some of those stories because it's one by one by one by many by millions. And, you know, we have to do that now. Thank you so much, Jean Marie Doré, for being with me
today.
It was a fun conversation. It was really,
really was. I enjoyed it. Thank
yeah.
you so much.
Wonderful. Thank you for all the work you're doing and the great role model that you are, you know, for participation and the heart that you bring to it. So, all right, everyone, see you next week on Connect the Dots, Wednesday, 10 a.m. Eastern on Progressive Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.